What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of the Alpha's Creed podcast. Today, I got a real badass motherfucker on the podcast today, okay, guys? And like I said, normally I kind of give you guys a bio or kind of give you guys a little rundown of who my guest is. But I, as I've told you guys recently in the last probably few weeks, I've been getting away from that because I feel like I butcher it. I feel like I butcher it because when I want you to hear it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. I want you to get it directly from them because when I give a bio, I don't really, you know, encapsulate, you know, the passion behind who this person is. So I'm going to let my guest today introduce herself and we're going to dive deep in. But I tell you what, everybody take notes because just from the conversations we've had, from what I know and from what she's accomplished, and I just gave it a little bit away, you do not do these things unless you are a badass motherfucker. And I can't wait to find out why. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Tracy Cortez, yes. Right? Again, I don't want to introduce you, you know, do the introduction for you because I used to do that. Like, I tell everybody, I used to do that. And I feel like I would butcher it, right? I would, like, kind of read off a bio or something like that. But you know what? It doesn't have the power of, like, what I want to hear from you, right? Mm-hmm. So as I ask every guest, and I will always ask every guest, what the hell is your story? Like, who the hell is Tracy Cortez? Give us a rundown.
Tracy Cortez, I fight for the UFC. Currently undefeated in the UFC.
I told you.
Undefeated in the UFC.
And you're 29 years old, young.
I just turned 29 in December.
Awesome. Yeah.
Feel like I'm 25.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just a Latina chasing her dream.
Okay. So let's really dive into this. Undefeated in the UFC, right? You're from Arizona, correct?
Born and raised.
Okay. Let's really just get into the weeds because that's who you are.
Yes.
But what's your story? How the hell did you get to this point? How the fuck did you end up becoming an undefeated UFC fighter, right? That is not something that, I mean, like what percent of the world can even say that?
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. There are 8 billion people on this planet. A lot of people love fighting. Fighting is a worldwide sport. Right? Yeah. I mean, especially because, you know, you're Latina, Mexico, you. Right?
Yes.
Very popular in Mexico, right? There's a lot of people who dream of doing that. But what percentage of people actually get to accomplish that dream or even get to live that dream? What the hell happened in your life that got you to this point? What's your story?
A lot of, sad to say, but a lot of tragedies.
Okay.
A lot of tragedies. Mm-hmm. But starting off from a young age, I grew up with 3 big brothers, 3 older brothers. Back in the day, you know, in 2000, like early 2000s, super traditional. Like what life back then isn't what it is now, you know.
Did you grow up in Arizona with your brothers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they all wrestled.
Okay.
Both parents were immigrant parents. They came from Mexico across the border. I'm first generation in the States.
Awesome.
Living the dream, you know. Coming from 3 big brothers and me being the youngest and only female, I didn't understand why they treated me so differently.
How so?
Yeah. So they would go outside and play.
Ah.
Oh, I want to go. No, get inside. Get inside, wash the dishes. What? I didn't even eat. They ate, know?
Yeah, right.
Little things like that. Or, hey, weekends, they'll go out to the movies or go to the wrestling practices or just do activities, kid activities. And I wasn't allowed to do it. And people think I'm being extra. But when I say I was not allowed to leave the house, it was school, home.
Yeah.
No friends. I couldn't have friends.
What?
Was
this your parents or your brothers or both?
Everybody.
Okay, why? Wait, what?
I don't know. They didn't trust. I wasn't allowed to spend the night at friends' houses. They were just, I was so sheltered. I was extremely sheltered. When I say sheltered, I mean sheltered. Yeah. They took care of me. I was the baby. We had to keep her pure for marriage and for children and be a housewife and just traditional, you know, Mexican woman.
Right.
And I turned out to be the black sheep of the
well, I don't know.
The black sheep. No, I really did.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, my brothers, all state champions.
Really?
Year after
all
year.
All 3 of them?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sorry, incredible. Except for one. He got second. The middle one.
That's still incredible.
Yeah, but the oldest and the youngest of the brothers, all, you know, 3-time, 4-time state champions. And then there's me. And they all graduated, went to college. And then there's me, that high school dropout, you know.
Oh.
At my mom took me out, I want to say, like mid-junior year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why is that?
My brother was going through a cancer. And he was, he was, so I started rebelling at a young age. Uh-huh. I want to, and I mean young.
Yeah. How young?
It's like seventh grade. I don't even know what age that is.
You're rebelling in seventh grade.
Yeah. Seventh grade.
Yeah, like 12 years old, kind of thing. Yeah. 13 years old.
Smoking weed, ditching school.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I was fucking up. Okay. I was, when I said I was the black sheep for years, I was fucking up. Mm. And then life kind of went a little blurry because my brother was going through chemo. My dad was never home. He was a truck driver.
Oh,
my
shit.
Mom worked from 5 to 5 for the city of Phoenix, which is admirable.
Yeah.
Immigrant woman now working for the city of Phoenix, you know, like, you know, like my mom was a hardworking woman.
Yeah.
And I think that's where my drive comes from as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
fast forward, got into high school, still experimenting with drugs, hanging out with the wrong group of kids.
Yeah.
And I mean wrong, like hanging out at the park, getting shot at from other gangs and hearing the bullets fly by, and I'm just sitting there just clueless about life, careless.
Uh-huh.
And my mom, she saw me, took me out of school, and then my entire family got so mad at her. You know, we had a family meeting.
They got mad at her for pulling you out of school?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
They wanted to send me to like military school and just send their easiest thing for them to do with me was send me away,
ship you off,
right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, if I like I remember correctly, like they never once asked me like how are you doing, how are you going through this, you know what I mean? And I was seeing my brother die, and he went like, if you find pictures of my brother, he was just fit, he was like Hulk to me, and I saw him go from like that superhero to just very depleted, and it took a toll on me. And something that I'll always, because my mom passed away too.
Oh,
5 years after my brother passed away
from
cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you had two people in your family pass away from cancer.
5 years apart.
Oh shit, man. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, she was the only one that really, like, talked to me, spoke to me. She was the one that understood me. Like, that woman believed in me, and she was like, "Man, you have potential." And, your brother was fighting for his life and you're killing yours. And that one hit me.
Yeah.
I was just like, holy shit. Like, I'm fucking up.
Yeah.
You know, especially because my brother was my hero. You know, still is to this day. They ask me like, oh, who do you admire? Who do you look up to? My brother. You know, he fought with the grape-sized fruit tumor in his heart. It's like
grape size?
A huge tumor in his heart.
Oh, wow.
Huge.
Shit.
And if you look, I have that video on my phone, but if we were to look at it, you could just see him like, he went from a cardio machine to just first round, couldn't even get past it.
Yeah.
Still won, but.
Yeah. Cancer is one of the most, I don't even know how to describe it, because my wife, you just met her, right? Her father just passed away from cancer as well.
Wow.
And to watch it, I mean, what you're describing is like, we watched it too, to watch their body just.
It's horrible.
Deplete. It's undescribable almost until you've actually seen it, someone you care about, someone you love, and to watch it happen to them, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit. I mean, like, I don't even know how to describe cancer, because it's just. It's like you just want to fucking hate it so much.
Yeah, you know,
like,
and you can't. It's one of those things where I've had friends that have told me that are now dealing with what I went through and saying, man, I didn't understand you until now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to say his name, but an acquaintance, right, that I know, his son just passed away. And he shot me a message and he said, you know what, Tracy, I never understood you and I always thought you were doing the most. Until he said, I see my son now and how he's grieving for his big brother. And that just hit me.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate that people that you just can't understand it unless you go through it.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad. It's a sad thing.
Right. I mean, now you're talking, not just your brother, but also your mother.
Yeah.
You know, so two family members passed away from cancer. What was that like for you?
So I was 15 when my brother passed away. His body just shut down on him. He passed away in my arms. And it was traumatic. To this day, I mean, I can still see his face. You know, it was a traumatic thing. And life that happened. And I still, I hate to say this, but even then I didn't appreciate life the way I do now.
Yeah.
Although I saw someone dearly close to my heart fighting for life, I didn't appreciate it or cherish it the way I do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the dichotomy of life itself. You cannot know joy without experiencing sorrow.
Yeah.
And the truth is, the more sorrow you experience, the more joy, the more capacity for joy you're able to feel. You know, because there cannot be light without darkness. Literally, like, there cannot be a mixture. There's no in between. It's either light or it's dark, right? And there cannot be joy if you've never had sorrow. And that's why it's one of the most incredibly, it's one of the hardest things ever to describe to somebody or talk to somebody, especially when they're going through it, is losing somebody is one of the best ways for you to enjoy every minute of your life.
Yeah, but it's also sad because you see stories, and my personal life, families also fall apart when people pass away.
Yes. They can.
Through to some nasty things, whether it's greed or they're just grieving different or it's just my family fell apart. I know that. You know, my brother was the tree trunk of our family.
There's
and
the glue.
Yeah. Mm. And when he passed away, like my one brother became really angry and we just couldn't talk to him. The other one kind of just distanced himself. Real sad.
Yeah.
My dad started working more as a truck driver, was never home. My mom dealing with all of us and then me fucking up, doing drugs, sneaking out, coming back, my parents seeing me blacked out in the doorstep because my friends leave or friends at the time left me there. So I turned, it was in December. It's crazy that I remember because it was right after I was partying for my 17th birthday. And got home, and then like a week or two later, at 17, my dad caught me sneaking into the house. But at that time, I only snuck out to go help a friend, cause they were too drunk and they couldn't. I'm a writer, always have been. I'm loyal to a fault. So if someone ever needs me, I go so much out of my way for them, right?
Yeah.
So I remember I was 17. They said, "Hey, I need a ride." His name was Edgar at the time. I was like, all right, man, I'll go pick you up, take you home, came back home. I opened the fucking door, and my dad's making a sandwich in the kitchen. And right then and there, he goes, get the fuck out. Like, you're not allowed back in this house. And then me being the rebel that I am, you know, me and my dad never had the best relationship. I was like, I'm out, bye. And I never went back. Never went back.
How old were you when that happened?
17.
So that was all around the same time, school, everything happening. If you don't mind me asking then, your brother passes away when you're 15, right? And then sounds like things kind of escalated from there for you, where, like, obviously, you know, like, there's a, you know, you're, you know, going through it before then, but once your brother passed away, things escalated for the worst. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes.
Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think, because, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, valuing life more. You know, if you're out doing those things, you know, I think now, especially with your at looking back now, that's not really the way to live life, right? So why do you think at that time you turned to the rebellion and that after your brother, you know, passed away?
You know, at the time, I want to say it was just me. But where I'm at now and looking back at life, it's one of those things where it was like, I was just so naive. I was young. I was naive. I was...
You think it stemmed a little from insecurities and stuff like that?
Yeah, and not so much insecurities, just still, because again, my family sheltered me, you know, so I didn't know what the world was like. I just knew that I could sneak out and party, have a good time, dance, drink, do whatever the fuck it is that I'm doing, and come back home and I have a roof over my head, you know? I was very naive. I was very...
Almost taking it for granted.
Maybe. Very much taking it for granted. I wasn't appreciative. I didn't appreciate my mom's work ethic. I didn't see my mom struggle from an immigrant living in the projects to where we were at now with a stable home, stable income. She's working for the city of Phoenix. Like, it's just everything, you know. I didn't see life. I was just young. You know, I didn't take any accountability. I don't know what kid at that age does, but...
You know, I mean, well, honestly, like, usually when kids are sheltered, right, this is typically what happens, you know, like, when they're sheltered, because as human beings, we want to struggle, mm-hmm. right? We know that's the only way to grow. It's almost miserable to not, right?
Yeah.
And so through that, that's why, the families who, shelter their kids, you always have those, rebellious children, because naturally in life, you have to struggle. Like, you didn't see your parents struggle to get here to come to America, right?
Yeah.
And then they made the best life they could for you, right? To try and shelter you and, mm-hmm. Keep you from what they saw in the outside world. But in all reality, that was, they wanted to do what's best for you. But that was a mistake, because you had to see the world and you had to understand the world and go through it, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, because how else would you grow?
Absolutely.
How else would you become who you're supposed to become if you just stayed at home doing dishes?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, right?
But I see it all the time. Yeah. Like, I have friends that are doing exactly what, mm-hmm. How do you say the word?
Statistics.
The Latina.
Yeah. Right,
they're doing, they have kids, they're married, mm-hmm. they're at home. Mm-hmm. They're living that life that mm-hmm. was supposed to be meant for me as well.
Right.
But getting kicked out at 17 and me being all stubborn, mm-hmm. I mean, still kind of am stubborn, but now I'm able to admit and navigate, okay, you know what? This is my ego. This is my pride. Let me calm down.
Yeah.
But I started couch surfing at friends' houses, this and that. Started getting jobs. I had 3 jobs at one point. Mm-hmm. I got lucky enough. I got extremely blessed where I turned 18. I was working at the gym as well. Mm-hmm. They knew my situation a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they allowed me to rent the house out at extremely cheap, super cheap.
Yeah.
Rented that house for a few years. Finally, the lady said, hey, you know what? We don't want to get rid of it. So she sold me the house.
Mm.
And that's when I bought my first house. I was 19, 20.
Yeah.
Got my first house. The gym provided me a car. So I started doing better with my life mm-hmm. at some point.
Yeah.
And then my mom got hit with cancer. Mm. And that one hit me hard.
What was that like for you? Had you been talking to her? Like, because you said you kind
of, I'm sorry.
Separated from your family.
Yeah, my family completely disowned me, except for my mom.
Ah, okay. So you're talking to your mom.
Yes.
Okay,
got it. Except for my mom. My brothers, my dad, they didn't want nothing to do with me. They stopped talking to me. They were just, I don't know what was going on through their mind, but they didn't want nothing to do with me mm-hmm. at the time.
Right.
Throughout the entire process, my mom was still there for me. Mm-hmm. She'll bring me food. She'll come over to the house. She knew that I was training and working nonstop. And I don't even know why I was training.
No, okay, so at this point, you were training for fighting?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
It was more of like a hobby. Mm. I was training just to, because I caught myself like, this is healthy for me.
Yeah.
And granted, like, I grew up with 3 big brothers mm-hmm. in a physical sport. I'm mm-hmm. I'm naturally a competitive person. Mm-hmm. So I enjoy the competition of just being there and enjoying the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I build great relationships from doctors, janitors, just mm-hmm. all from people all over the world that would just come train. And my life started moving up mm-hmm. and my mom saw me and she was proud of me. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day I was working the front desk at Fight Ready, but at the mm-hmm. time it was called The Den. And my brother called me early in the morning, like a few minutes after I opened the gym. He said, hey, mom got rushed to the ER. She collapsed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the fuck you mean she collapsed? Mm-hmm. Like, she can't breathe. Mm-hmm. I just dropped everything. A coworker was coming in. I was like, I gotta go. And I just left. Mm-hmm. Went to the ER and I just never left her side from there. Mm-hmm. I kind of just stayed there for the entire time she was in the hospital, down to her going to hospice. Mm. I was with her and she also passed away in my arms. Mm. It was so, I've had a lot of tragedy.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of tragedies in my life.
Yeah.
But that one hit me hard.
Yeah.
That one hit me hard because, having someone, I mean, your wife would know. I don't know how close she was with her father, but mm-hmm. having someone that has that real unconditional love that believes in you more than you believe in yourself, which we all need that person. I think we all need someone that believes in us far more than us believing in, you know, because as humans, we have doubts. You know, even me to this day, I'm in camp and I start doubting myself. Damn, can I win this girl? Can I really do it? This girl's bad. She's been in the UFC, more experience. And I have my coaches like, hey, you're the fucking shit. So having that, you know, that pure honesty. And she was my rock at the time. I was young. I was 19, turning 20. And to have that taken away from me. Yeah, it took a toll on me, man. That one was hard, but when my brother passed away, I knew I was younger. I took life for granted, so I kept fucking up. But when my mom passed away, I was really cherishing life. You know, I was still in a place where it's like, why? You know, kind of, a little almost victim mentality.
Sure.
Like, why? Like, why am I fucking going through this? And still with the sadness and the grieving and the losses, like I still used it. I was capable. I don't know how to use it as motivation. You know, I realized, almost like a gateway, you know, I want to say an escape, but a healthy escape. I with so much loss, I've been able to build a relationship with my brothers now, where they're my best friend.
That's amazing.
You know, they're my best friend, and I see my other brother Junior, and he trains with me every day. And something I definitely don't do now is take my life for granted. You know, I take life a day. I'm present a day at a time. I have my moments because life ain't fucking easy.
Sure.
And I just keep taking, you know, I keep something my mom said, just keep putting one foot in front of another. And that's all we can do.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's an old Chinese proverb for, I believe it's Confucius, who says, we have two lives in this world. And the second one begins the moment we realize we only have one. Right?
Wow.
You know, and that second life that begins is literally when you're telling your story, that quote right there, that Chinese proverb is just ringing true because, you know, and unfortunately, right, you went through two of these tragedies and it was on the second one where it really rang true to you is that you truly do only have one shot at this life.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and it was because, and obviously I believe, you know, you were very young with the first one and you have every reason it's your brother, you know, like, you know, to bring out almost a rage, right?
Yeah.
But then for your mother, right, almost to bring this, you know, not necessarily peace, but more so an idea of like, I have one life.
Yeah.
Right? I have one life. And it's not fucking worth it go through life being, you know, just being angry all the fucking time, you know?
Yeah.
It's not worth it just living life, hating everybody, or just wanting to fuck up your own shit.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, the drugs, all that shit that everyone, you know, talks about, glorifies the party. It's so worthless. You know, and some people never get that. What's sad is that some people never get that. They live, and because let's talk about like the people you grew up with. How many of them are still living that life? How many of them who have seen their friends get shot or their family members get shot, and they for some reason continue to live in that life?
Yes. You know, this is going to sound crazy, but there is a point in my life where I wanted to pursue my career. Like, you know what? I'm gonna go for it. And for anybody that knows MMA, financially, it is not the best fucking sport to be in.
No.
You know?
No.
We all fucking know that. It's financially, it's not the best sport to be in. And I still chose this path. Nevertheless, I chose it, my decision. I want to say 24, 25. Not that long ago.
No, yeah.
Not that long ago.
That's really not that
long. I'm 29 now. I just turned 29.
So is that when you started training? Was 24, 25?
No, I started training when I was, I want to say, 17,
18. Oh, wow. Okay, so you've been training for a while before you really went for it.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay. Yeah.
But I decided to put all my, I quit all my jobs and I put all my eggs in one basket. I said, there's no fucking plan B. This is my leap of faith.
Yeah.
You know, there's that jump everyone's scared to take.
Right.
Like, I'm going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
and I quit all my jobs and I put everything I had into the sport. I kid you not, there was a couple, for a few months I was living off of my friend's food stamps. My friend that I've known since sixth grade, you know, we used to go to class together and ditch school and whatever. She ended up having a few kids and I would use her food stamps and my brothers would help me pay for groceries. I was struggling. Sometimes I'll hit like the negative. I was struggling, man. And finally I started doing better, getting sponsors and my life started going up. And I would tell my friend, like, hey, like, I'm not using your food stamps no more. Like, I'm able to pay my bills now. I'm doing good for myself. You should be too. Like, why are you still on food stamps? And I wanted more for her. Right? Because, granted, I'm also seeing life differently at this age. And she was very much comfortable. She's like, yeah, like, I don't think she saw life moving. Long story short, this one friendship that I cherished, I had to let her go. Her and many other friends, you know, and I'm thankful that we're still in touch, but they didn't judge me for it either. They, because I was trying to drag them along with me because, you know, I don't know if you know that saying, but it's like you are who you hang out with.
Oh, yeah. You're the sum total of the five people you hang around.
Yes.
You know, like there's thousands of sayings that all describe the same thing. You are exactly who you hang around. No question.
You feel me? So I was, it was a little bit after my mom passed away. I was hanging out with her. I was trying to move up and I'm like, man, what am I doing here? Like everyone here partying, doing nothing. And then they're going to go to work. And it's again, we're here the few days later doing the same bullshit. You know, and she's never, she don't want to get a job cause she's comfortable with, I don't want to put their business out there, but I'm no one to judge, you know, but I know I wanted more for my life and I was stressing because I wanted them to come with me, but they didn't want it for themselves. And I explained this to them and I told all my people, I was like, yo, I love you guys, but I can't be around this no more. So I stopped coming around and I started hanging around and I made beautiful connections with amazing people. And I started seeing some things outside of Maryville, outside of Phoenix, this little bubble that I was in. You know, and I started traveling, seeing the world and meet, like I have people all over the world now. If I call someone out of the country anywhere, hey, I'm going here. Hey, China, Brazil, fucking Mexico. Like, I can, I have a place to stay. You know, and it's because I'm choosing my circle, you know. And some people might call me shallow for it, but in all honesty, I just want better. You know, it's my life. You only have one. And the people that I once knew and kicked it with, they still love me and respect me. Because I was straightforward about it. You know, and do I still go back to the hood and talk, kick it with them once in a while? Yeah, I do.
Well,
I
see, it's rare that you still have a relationship with those people because, you know, loyalty is such a misunderstood term, okay? When people talk about loyalty, most of the time when someone rises through the ranks or they, you know, rise above, the, you know, where they came from, you know what tends to happen, right, is people around you start saying, who do you think you are, right?
Hey, oh, I've had those.
I'm sure you've had that, right? But the fact that you had still some people who still support you is very powerful, right? Because those people support you in becoming who you are at your greatest form, right? Like this logo and this podcast, everything, like I interview people who have accomplished great things, meaning they're on the path of greatness, right? And the path of greatness is a very lonely path. And as you continue to progress, you quickly realize these people around you, people you grew up with, you know, people who you actually love and care about
deeply,
do not fit your path. And as much as you want to take them with you, as much as you want them to be there with you because you want to do it together, they will never be where you can be because they are so satisfied with where they're at, right? Maybe it's small town mentality. Maybe it's just comfort, you know, good being the enemy of great, right? Life's good. So why would you, why would I ever want to shoot for greatness? It sucks, right? It's brutal. Lonely. It's lonely,
it's
right?
Sad. It's a sad road. It really is. It's
and then you
road.
Get people all around you saying, as you continue rising, by the way, this only gets worse the higher you rise it the does. Ranks of people going, you forgot where you came from. You think you're better than us, right? All this kind of stuff. And of course they would say that because they see you rising to a level that just your greatness shining a light on their mediocrity. Wherein they say, this person person came from my exact same place, from we grew up together, mm-hmm. and she made decisions that I did not make. Because of that, she's accomplished this, and I have stayed here. Mm-hmm. So what is my excuse for this? My excuse is, oh, she's just going after something. It's her fault that she's going there. She forgot where she came from.
Yeah.
Look, like, for me, it's like, I know who I am. I'm good right here, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's why what I'm saying, if you got people who are actually supporting you from where you are,
yeah.
that is so rare,
yeah.
you know, to actually have people who support you on your path, on your journey, because most of the time, most of those people, if not all of them, end up turning against you saying, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
This is why yeah. most people don't ever escape the ghetto,
mm-hmm.
because they look at everybody around them like, oh, I got to be loyal to my homies. No, you don't. You got to be loyal to you
and your family and your dream. Career,
that's exactly right. Loyalty being the enemy of greatness. Because why am I loyal to people?
To me, loyalty is, you know what? I love you.
Uh-huh.
I'm no one to stop you. Go do what you got to do.
That's right.
Just know when you look back, I'm right here.
That's right.
That's what loyal to me is.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like I'm pursuing my dream. I have friends recently. Jose Silva. He just came to visit me. That's a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. He saw me at the gym and I was on my phone when I was supposed to be working out.
Uh-huh.
It's rare for him to ever come around
uh-huh.
to the area that I live in.
Yeah.
And he came up to me, he goes, hey, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, working out. He goes, you're on your phone. He goes, mm-hmm. beautiful. I love that my friends that mm-hmm. I grew up with, that I still consider friends, although I'm not around often,
mm-hmm.
they're able to walk up to me and say, put your phone down.
Mm-hmm.
Go fucking get to work.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I work all day. They're like, yeah. it doesn't matter. Are you where you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at him like, damn, thank
yeah,
you.
Right.
You know, little things yeah. like little moments like that I appreciate, you know, my hood where I came from, just
yeah.
because a lot of people don't have that. It's like mm-hmm. they get stuck into being there and don't want to move on, or they're stuck there, but they're trying to live this dream, but still go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Where to me, it's like, it's not, there's nothing wrong to going back, but just know I can't stay here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love you guys. I'm a come back. I'm a visit you guys, but if you guys don't want to come with me and just support me, like, I appreciate you, I love you, you know, let me get to work.
Yeah, right. Let me, I'm going to change, not necessarily change topics here, but I do have a question for you, right? Mm-hmm. Being a woman in a fighting sport.
Male dominant sport.
Sure, I mean, that, right? I mean, fighting, right, yeah. is typically, you know, like, dudes, right? Mm-hmm. How's that been for you, right? Because I've actually, you know, like, you know, to be honest, like I've been in space a little bit, but you know, there's very few women in it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a question I have always wanted to ask is like, what is life like for you, right? Do you receive a lot of hate being a woman in the UFC or fighting in MMA? Do you receive a lot of support? To walk me through that. What has that been like for you in your journey?
I get a little bit of everything.
Interesting.
You know, for the most part, my on my social media, I have a lot of love and support.
Interesting.
I have a lot of love and support. I get those trolls, you know, that
naturally
talk shit, yeah. fucking
right.
Oh, she's gonna become an OnlyFans girl just because it's shamed on. Yeah,
right.
But granted, I have friends, you know, that are on it. I don't give a fuck. It's mm-hmm. just personally where I'm at mm-hmm. in my stage in life, my season. I don't need to do any of that. I'm
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been blessed, and I'm gonna continue to be blessed. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm speaking that into existence right now, mm-hmm. but. I'm mm-hmm. male dominant sport. I really don't have a lot of girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my friends are males.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard because I remember mm-hmm. at first when I was in the gym, I actually said this story not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the gym and, this new team came from another gym
mm-hmm.
from the other side of town
mm-hmm.
in Arizona. It's called the Lab.
Mm-hmm.
A group of their fighters came over to Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
To fight ready
mm-hmm.
and I remember I'm not gonna say his name because I don't want to bash him
mm-hmm.
but I was taking a photo at the time
mm-hmm.
and he disrespected me
mm-hmm.
like, oh, is that for your OnlyFans or is that for this mm-hmm. which is not a big disrespect,
sure,
but in the industry that I'm in, you know, yeah, yeah mm-hmm. it was a little shot,
yeah,
and being the only female fighter
mm-hmm.
I need these men to respect me as an athlete,
mm-hmm.
not just as a piece of ass or a piece mm-hmm. of meat walking right. around training right. with them.
Yeah.
Because you see that a lot.
Yeah.
And me, something that I learned from my mom, because she, working for the city of Phoenix, she was also in a male dominant atmosphere.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And I remember my mom, she was like, yeah, you know, they try to joke around. And I was like, hey, respect me. granted, her English isn't the best, right? So
respect me. Yeah.
And I go, Mom, it was a joke, right? And this was me when I was a teen.
Yeah.
She goes, no, mija. Mm-hmm. Goes, if they disrespect you once, they're going to continue to. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, oh my God, traditional, like old-fashioned Mexican. Mm-hmm. She goes, and I go, so what else you tell them? She said, yo les dije. I told them, no ja, 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 no je, je, je. You respect me, mm-hmm. no jokes. Mm-hmm. I'm a woman working. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, at the time, right, because I'm a teenager. Sure. Like, Mom. And I caught myself doing the same fucking shit in my to me, it's my job. Mm-hmm. Training is my job.
Yeah.
So when they made that joke, I got extremely disrespected because as a woman in a male dominant sport, mm-hmm. I work hard, extremely hard to be respected.
Sure.
As an athlete.
Yeah.
Because you see it all the time. These females come in and out just trying to hook up with the fighters and then they leave.
No kidding.
Right. All the time.
That's the thing.
Huh? All the time.
Like, wait, actually, so they're coming in training just to,
they'll train, the, yeah. and then next thing you know, they're flirting, and they date one fighter and another fighter, and they think they're being slick.
What do next you call that? Because, I mean, in the country, we call that, buckle bunnies, right?
Or oh, my
then
God.
Snow bunnies, and then there's, you know, what do you call that in the UFC? Glove bunnies or something? Like, what do you
shit, I'm fucking groupies. I don't know.
Yeah, was there a term for that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, the girls.
Oh, gym hoppers.
Gym hoppers?
Gym hoppers.
Okay, there you go.
Yes, gym hoppers.
There you go, because... That's funny. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. And I was like, no, man, you guys got me fucked up. Mm. Like, granted, I'm a little hood, so it came out, right? Mm. And my teammate went to the restroom, and I sat outside the restroom, the men's locker room, mm-hmm. for him to come out. Mm. And he took a while, and then I go, hey, so-and-so. I go, can you call him out, please?
Mm.
And they're like, because if you see me in the gym.
Yeah.
I go in, I train, I do my thing, mm-hmm. and I leave. Mm-hmm. Like, that is my work environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll fuck around a little bit here and there, but not to the extent where they all do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very professional in my career.
Right.
And everybody could vouch for it. Mm-hmm. Every single motherfucker in that gym could vouch for it. Mm-hmm. So they went in there, they go, hey, Tracy's waiting for you outside. She wants to talk to you.
Mm.
Apparently his reaction was, oh my fucking God, I already know what it is.
Mm.
Like, damn, I fucked up.
Mm.
He came out. He's like, Tracy. He grabbed me by my shoulder. Mm. He goes, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to disrespect you.
Mm.
I go, come here. I was about to say his name. Mm. I was like, I go, sit right here, bro.
Mm.
I go, let me tell you something.
Mm.
I go, I'm nice. I'm quiet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I stay to myself. I go, but anybody that tries to fucking disrespect me, I will come to you face to face. I said, don't disrespect me again.
Mm-hmm.
I go, I work extremely hard to be respected here
mm.
in a male-dominant sport. I train nothing but with men.
Mm.
If they see you fucking around with me like that, they're going to think it's okay and it's not.
Mm.
I go, this is my job.
Yeah.
Act like it.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, done.
Mm.
He goes, respect. Shook hands, called it a day.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, I got like all my coaches calling me, what the fuck happened? I was like, nothing, man.
Well, you guys didn't like fight or anything. No, it was just talk. Yeah.
But no one has approached me that way.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they do let me be.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I've been disrespected in the gym like that.
Mm.
To me, it was disrespect. To a lot of people, it might just mm-hmm. be a joke, but yeah. to each their own, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, man, that's funny. They're like, you sure did put him in his place.
Mm.
It's like,
yeah.
you know, I love my job. I love my career. And
yeah.
I do want to be, I am a respected athlete in it,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah. So.
Right. Well, let me ask you this then. What was your first fight in the UFC like? Because that's something I'm really interested in.
I was ballsy.
Yeah, okay, like, tell me about it. Because, ballsy. I mean, you went through, I mean, people understand who's listening to this because obviously, you know, like a lot of people are in the business space who listen to this, right? Mm. A lot of entrepreneurs out here, mm-hmm. right? People don't understand, like, you do not just get to go to the UFC. Mm-mm. You have a long career, a brutal career of fights to earn that position to go pro. And then not even just go pro. There's a difference of going pro and then going UFC because yes. UFC is the highest level of going pro,
yeah.
right?
It's different.
So, because you then go pro trying to earn your way to get to the UFC, right?
Yeah.
So what was it like for you to not only get your first fight in the UFC and how did that come about? Walk me through, yeah. how did that first fight come about? What was that first fight like? Talk me through it.
So before even UFC, let's rewind to my like audition to the UFC.
Okay.
Dana White Contender Series,
uh-huh.
right? When I was doing my Dana White Contender Series, I want to say I was 25. Yeah, I was 25 years. So my brother passed away. 5 years later, my mom passed away. 5 years later, I get signed to the UFC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it was quick.
Yeah. Wow. It was really quick. Uh-huh. I just kept putting one foot in front of another, uh-huh. man. I kept working. I was grinding. I was, uh-huh. it was grit, you know? And I was going through during my training camp, uh-huh. And the loss of my mom, still grieving. 2 years after that, I was going through a breakup of 9 years. Uh-huh. Right. So yeah, I was going through like that, the yeah. breakup, the pressure of, damn, I got to make this happen because if not, like, this is my one shot, mm-hmm. you know? And that's how I saw it. Like, I don't have no plan B. I don't yeah. have a college degree. I don't have nothing. This is, I really put everything I had into this. Mm-hmm. Dana White Contender Series happens. Summer of, I forgot what year. Yeah, I forgot what year. Mm-hmm. But Dana White Contender Series happens. And I was so underestimated. I was the underdog. Mm-hmm. Like, she's going to lose. This girl that's coming in. She's like mm-hmm. a Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She's up and the champ at the time, the strawweight champ.
Oh, okay.
Her name's Joanna. If you look her up, she was undefeated. She was a champion year after year. Uh-huh. And this girl I fought at 125 was supposed to be the next her. Mm. And even Dana White says, you can see the interview on YouTube where he was like, man, sure, was I fucking wrong? Mm. He goes, Tracy, like, I put in work. Mm. I had grit. I didn't stop. I kept coming forward, you know?
Yeah.
Even a little gangster in me came out. I was like, let's fucking go.
Yeah, right.
And I got signed and I was like, oh my God, okay, this isn't even it. Mm-hmm. This is just a little teaser.
Yeah.
Pro debut came around, or COVID happened. Mm. So I couldn't even do my pro debut or my UFC debut because COVID. Mm. And when COVID happened, it was like a year off, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And finally, that's when they started kind of opening, or was it? It was pre-COVID. I'm sorry, I'm confusing my years. It was pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was, okay, where does Tracy want to fight?
Yeah.
Who is she going to fight? They said, we have this one girl. I said, I want to fight as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I took a fight, a division up at 135, because mm-hmm. I fight at 120, flyweight, 135. Yeah,
right.
I moved up to bantamweight, 135. Mm-hmm. And I fought a Brazilian in Brazil.
Oh, shit. You went down to Brazil?
I went down to Brazil.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. I wanted to make a statement. Like, mm-hmm. I'm here, and I ain't scared of nobody, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Fought at 135. I won. Mm. Backstage, when they closed the curtains and cameras are finally off, I just fell on my knees, and I broke down crying. Mm. It was like, damn, I did it.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah.
You know, moving up a weight class, mm-hmm. bigger girl. Mm-hmm. And these girls are big. Mm-hmm. Do you know who Amanda Nunes is?
Yeah.
Yeah, big. These are big girls. Mm-hmm. Moving up a weight class and then fighting in your opponent's backyard, mm-hmm. Brazil. Mm-hmm. I'm walking out and they're yelling, kill her, kill mm-hmm. her.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, mm-hmm. I'm about to die out here if I beat this girl.
Right.
You know, but even then it didn't stop me.
Mm. Dude, that's awesome.
And after that, COVID happened, fought in Abu Dhabi, came back, fought in Vegas.
Oh, shit, so you've been fighting all over. You're not just fighting, like, you know, like in Vegas or like anywhere around.
Yeah, everywhere.
Damn, okay. So right now, as you said before, you're 4-0 on the UFC, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the goal?
I think I'm 5-0.
5-0? Okay, 5-0.
With the Contender Series, yeah.
Right, okay. So what's the goal? Like, how long do you see yourself doing this, if you don't mind me asking? Yeah, like, you know, what's the future look like for you?
You know, I might get judged for this, but I don't want to be fighting at 35.
I don't think anyone's going to judge you for saying that.
I don't want to. No, because you see athletes do it all the time, and these MMA fans, they go hard, and they're like, oh, you're not a real fucking fighter at heart. Mm. It's like, give a fuck. I'm 35. I'm a woman.
Right.
You know, I want to be married. I want to have kids. Mm. I want to pursue a different career.
Yeah.
But right now, my goal for the next year and a half is to start getting closer to that belt. Mm. You know, I do see myself being the champion 2024.
Huh?
Yeah, next year.
Okay, shit. Have you ever said that on a podcast before?
I don't think so.
Okay, first time. I love it. We're stamping it right now on YouTube. We're stamping this 2024.
End of 2024. I know I'm going to be a champion.
Hell yeah.
You know, I really got to focus, stay disciplined, and just stay on course.
Now, let me press on that a little bit, if you don't mind me asking. I'm going to look in the eye and ask you a question. Why? Like, why are you so certain that in 2024 you're going to be champion in 2024?
Because I just know it.
Why?
You know, I work too hard. You know, it's I've seen what discipline could do in a short matter of time. Mm-hmm. I've seen what staying focused for a good period of time could do.
Yeah.
I've done it over and over. You know, I've lacked off. I fucked around in my career and it kind of took a little halt. Like, stop.
Yeah.
And then I go back at it, and next thing you know, I'm fucking shooting. I'm, like, making articles. Uh-huh. You know, I'm making articles. I'm moving up in the rankings. Mm-hmm. I went from a nobody to – I'm now number, I think, 13 in the world in the women's division.
Wow.
For pound, number 13. I'm just like, holy shit. So I know what hard work could do
if
you focus it. Mm-hmm. So I know if I focus and I give it up my all, no distractions – no fucking around for the next year and a half, which is 3-4 more fights. In 3 fights, maybe the fourth one, I know I'll be fighting for the belt. I know I will be. And three fights could happen in a year. 4 fights is a year and a half. So I can see myself, you know?
Yeah.
I just really got to stay disciplined and not rely on that bullshit. Oh, how do you stay motivated? It's like, I'm not fucking motivated. I'm not motivated. I'm tired. I wake up in the morning with my body hurting, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not motivation. It's discipline.
Yeah.
It's knowing the end goal.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what sets a fire in my heart.
Right.
You know, my purpose, my why, the fire inside me is like, I see, perfect example this morning. I was in the shower. I was listening to something on my phone. And it's gonna sound corny. I was in the mirror in my hotel room and I was envisioning me winning the belt, what I was gonna say after my victory, thanking my mom, thinking it, like telling my brother we did it, you know, in the cage. And I got emotional. I started crying.
Yeah.
You know, and this is early this morning, this is 8 in the morning. You know, and I'm crying and I open my eyes and I'm like, and pussy, I was like, stop crying. But that's the passion I have in me. You know, that's the drive. That's something that no one could stop me but me. And I know if I just stay on course for the next year and a half, like, I'm unstoppable. You know, I know I am.
Dude, I love it. I love it. I want to watch that fight. Better make it happen now. We've spoken it. It's going to fucking happen, right?
Absolutely.
So when that happens, I'll make sure I buy a ticket for us and the whole squad. We're going out 2024. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you spit some fire on this podcast. It's been fun talking to you. But I don't want to finish off without at least asking this, okay? A lot of people listening to this, a lot of people are going to see this, right? It goes all over TikTok, YouTube. We get a lot of views and a lot of downloads, right? But if there's one thing you'd want to leave our audience with, or anyone who ends up seeing this story, what would you want them to know? What would you want to say?
What would I want to say is something that has been helping me, you know, in this season of my life right now, because I'm going through some shit too, is gratitude. Gratitude. I've been, in life, I've been hit with a lot of losses, tragedies, things that I personally, it's gonna sound, I don't think life is fair.
No.
So for me to say I don't deserve it or it's unfair sounds, but it has been unfair to a certain degree, you know? But in this current season that I'm in, I will say that gratitude has helped me a lot in the season. It's appreciating the little things around you, such as being here.
I'm
grateful that you've allowed me to be here.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what's going on back home right now in this present moment, I'm grateful. And it's something little as just gratitude that could change the perspective, the way your day is going to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope if whoever is watching this, if you're going through anything, just remember to, and it is hard to just be grateful for the little things, such as the clothes you have, you know, on your back, the roof over your head, the meal you're about to eat. Be grateful for the people around you. Be grateful that you're not sick.
Yeah. the breath you're allowed to take today. Yeah.
Be grateful that you're alive, you're moving, because a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
You know, I saw my mom struggling to breathe, and I'm sitting next to her just taking deep breaths like nothing. Like,
yeah.
I took that breath without even realizing it, and it's just like, I'm just grateful.
Yeah.
You know, those little things that really changes your day.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to, I mean, you could not have said a more powerful thing, because in the world full of depression and anxiety and all these things, there's literally something that no one talks about, is that gratitude literally dissolves depression.
Completely.
It cannot exist together.
Completely.
You cannot be depressed and grateful at the same time.
Exactly.
They're literally polar opposites, like fire and water.
And don't get it wrong. Yeah. You know, like, I get sad.
Of
You're going to get sad. We're human.
You have to, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's inevitable, but something that we could, you know, our mind is a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Our mind is a powerful thing, and when you're able to train your mind to see life differently than what the way it's going,
yeah,
like, you become a powerful motherfucker.
Yeah,
you become Absolutely. A very powerful person. And I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that I'm, you know, living the life I'm living, all despite of all the losses that I've gone through. You know, instead of questioning, like, oh my God, why did my mom have to pass away? It's like, damn, I'm grateful I got to have a great mother.
Yeah.
I'm grateful I got to see my brother train and his work ethic.
Mm.
You know, I'm grateful to have still two brothers alive. I'm grateful my brother left a little girl that reminds me of him. Just changing your perspective.
Yeah.
That could really change your life.
Mm.
And the way you see it and the way you move in it.
Yeah.
And once you change that perspective, I do believe great things tend to happen.
Mm. Amen. So. Mm. I love it. That's a great way to finish this bad boy off. Man, you spit some fire on this one. Okay, what's the best place that people can get a hold of you? If they want to follow you, they want to keep up with your career, they want to see you in 2024. Everybody listen to this. We're stamping it in now together. The Alpha Creed podcast community, 2024. We're going to watch this woman take the UFC belt. We're all speaking.
Oh, I just
right
got
now.
The chills.
Good, love it. Everyone, for how can people get a hold of you if they have questions for you, or if they want to follow you? What's the best way for them to find
on
you?
Instagram, it's Cortez MMA, and on Twitter and Facebook, it's Tracy Cortez MMA.
Okay, all right. So we'll make sure to tag those at the bottom. We'll get everybody in contact with you. But
thank you
so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's awesome to have you.